probably millions of damage in just a few blocks of Tuscaloosa that have been totally destroyed. So we have some major damage.
Says Alabama Governor Robert Bentley, Tuscaloosa is probably the hardest hit city in the state, but as many as a million people are without power. They've even started shutting down a nuclear power plant in northern Alabama for safety reasons. The governor says everybody's doing their best.
It's just that you cannot prepare against an F5 tornado.
President Obama also sending federal aid through FEMA, Dave.
Yeah, but a police officer's dead in the flooding in Kentucky. His car going into water, then slamming into a utility pole. There are flood advisories from Montana to Louisiana up to Maine. How's the economy? Getting worse again. Fox News Radio's Jessica Stone live in Washington.
Dave, the economy stalling in the first quarter. The government says it grew at just 1.8%. That's about half its growth rate last fall and the worst showing since last spring. Higher gas prices, lower defense spending, and bad weather delaying construction projects getting the blame. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says the slowdown is a temporary setback, Dave.
No worry. On Wall Street, Jessica, the Dow up 10 points. A royal disinvitation in London. Syria's ambassador no longer welcome at Prince William's wedding tomorrow because of Syria's deadly crackdown on anti-government protesters. By the way, the forecast for the wedding, possibly stormy. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Paid for by Stansberry & Associates Investment Research.
A very wealthy U.S. citizen is predicting that in 2011, we will witness the most important day in America in more than 50 years. He says it will change everything about our lives. The way you shop, travel, invest, educate your children, and even how you take care of your health and your own family. Now, this man has made some outrageous predictions over the years. The crazy part is, he's usually right. You see, he predicted the collapse of GM, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and America's biggest mall owner, General Growth Properties. In fact, Barron's called his work a dire prophecy. Recently, he created a video, which you can watch online for free, detailing his biggest and most important prediction yet, and it's a real eye-opener. I can't stress this enough. You should at least watch this free video online today. He explains everything you need to know, including simple steps you can take to protect yourself.
You can find the video at www.endofamerica44.com. That's endofamerica44.com. Watch the free video at www.endofamerica44.com. That's endofamerica44.com.
Well, now back to Wall Street, where investors are digesting more than just today's report of a slowing economy. Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti is here live.
Dave, the number of people filing for first-time jobless benefits rose by 25,000 last week to a three-month high of 429,000. That's the second rise in 3 weeks. Higher oil prices boosting profits at ExxonMobil, earnings up 69%. Chrysler says it is taking out loans and selling debt to repay $6.5 billion in bailout loans. And Walmart is bringing back rifles, shotguns, and ammunition in an attempt to boost sales. As for stocks, the Dow is up 15 points, Dave.
Lauren, the price of oil up a bit more this morning, over $113 a barrel. At the gas pump, another slight increase. AAA puts self-serve regulars national average at near $3.89 a gallon. The NFL draft starts tonight, and there is a lot more drama than just who the top picks will be.
The National Football League has suffered a second court rejection. The federal judge who lifted the NFL lockout on Monday now denying the league's request for a stay of that ruling pending appeals. That means the 32 teams, thousands of players, and millions of fans remain in limbo, the league having no rules in place since its collective bargaining agreement ended March 11th. The judge says that as the draft begins, the league can make its own decisions about how to proceed. Whether that'll include free agency or any other rules drawn up is anybody's guess, but the league says it will be appealing this latest ruling. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Two more NBA teams advance in the playoffs. The Heat knock off the 76ers in a close game five.
We made it tough to close those guys out, but, you know, it was needed to help us to get us to where we want to go.
Chris Bosh scored 22 in Miami's win. The Thunder also move on to the second round, eliminating the Nuggets, while the Spurs barely stay alive. The West's top seed beat the Grizzlies in overtime, but Memphis still leads San Antonio 3-2. The Bruins and the Lightning both advance in the NHL playoffs with wins in game seven. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD3, New Rochelle.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. It looks like a flash flood watch in effect from midday right through this evening. Heavy thunderstorms just looming off to our west, associated with an approaching frontal system. We'll give us showers and gusty thunderstorms, thunderstorms with strong gusty winds, and heavy downpours today. Our highs will reach the lower 70s. For tonight, still the chance of some showers, but then clearing up overnight. Nighttime lows, mid-50s with lower humidity. It'll be mostly sunny on Friday, with Friday's highs in the upper 60s. Some clouds at night, nighttime lows mid-40s. Saturday mostly sunny in the mid-60s. Sunday mostly sunny in the upper 60s. In our extended forecast, Monday looks like increasingly cloudy weather. A chance of some late day or evening showers, highs near 70. Showers likely on Tuesday, then clearing on Wednesday of next week. Wednesday's highs in the lower 60s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
At Entergy, meeting our region's need for reliable, affordable, and clean electricity is an everyday success story. That's because our Indian Point Energy Center supplies up to 38% of the region's power needs. It also produces some of the least expensive power generated in the region. And most importantly, it does not produce greenhouse gas emissions. That's right, zero greenhouse gases. This plays a key role in helping this area improve its air quality. So it should come as no surprise that a growing number of environmentalists, including Dr. Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, say nuclear power is a vital tool in the fight against global warming. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.safesecurevital.com. Because the more you know, the more you realize that Indian Point's clean, reliable, and affordable energy is a big part of the climate change solution.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Police Commissioner Pat Carroll, Stella Hall, Judge Gail Rice, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
This is the last locally owned and locally operated independent community station in the New York metro area. Your own WVOX, the local station with a national reputation. WVOX Worldwide, AM 1460 and WVOX.com.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
Good morning. Welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Joining me in the studio today is Mayor Emeritus of Mount Vernon, Ernie Davis. He will be on hand for at least part of today's show. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, April 28th, 2011, the 40th day of spring. Almost time to put the tomatoes and peas and beans and cucumbers in. All right, I could go on, but put them in the ground pretty soon. We have gained 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 35 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun rose at 5:58 this morning. It will set at 7:48 this evening. We will have 13 hours and 50 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 3:29 this morning. It will set at 3:43 this afternoon. We are 1 day before last quarter. Next full moon is on May 17th. Next high tides in New Rochelle. Well, they're pretty high right now. It was 9:10. Next one is at 9:31 this evening. In Yonkers at 7:19 this evening. Tarrytown 8:03. And in Peekskill at 8:42 p.m. Now a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Casualties whom we honor today by calling their names. Specialist Joseph Allen Kennedy, age 25, of St. Paul, Minnesota. He was with the 1st Infantry Combat. He died in combat of small arms fire in Ghazni province on April 15th. These are all Afghanistan. Specialist Joel Alvarez Ramirez, age 22, of Waxahachie, Texas. He was with the 10th Mountain Division. He was one of three soldiers killed when they were attacked by a roadside bomb in Nimroz province on April 16th. The other two killed in that same incident were Sergeant Paul Jed Atim, age 27, of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Corporal Charles Jeffrey Wren, age 25, of Beeville, Texas. Also, Specialist Joseph Brian Semper, age 21, of Warrensburg, Missouri. He was with the Screaming Eagles, 101st Airborne. He was one of five soldiers killed in a suicide attack by an Afghan National Army soldier in Nangarhar Province, Afghanistan, on April 16th. The other four killed in that same incident were Captain Charles Edward Ridgely Jr., age 40, from Baltimore, Maryland. Sergeant Linda Lamour Pierre, age 28, of Immokalee, Florida. Staff Sergeant Cynthia Renee Taylor, age 39, of Columbus, Georgia. Sergeant First Class Charles Lewis Adkins, age 36, of Sandusky, Ohio. Mortally wounded in that same attack was Sergeant Sonny Jade Moses, age 22, from Koror, Palau. He was with the 101st, of course. Sergeant Moses died 2 days later on April 18th at Landstuhl Medical Center in Germany. That was in that very incident. 6 American service members were killed, 4 men and 2 women, all with the 101st, except for Captain Ridgely. He was with the 17th Combat Sustainment Support Battalion. Private First Class John Francis Keem, age 19, from Philadelphia. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, died as a result of a non-battle-related injury in Kandahar Province, April 19th. And as I look at some of the pictures, these are just young boys. I mean, they're young men, of course, 19, they're men. But you look at the face, it's a boy. It's a boy. Sergeant John Paul Castro, age 25, of Andrews, Texas, with the 101st. He died in combat, killed in combat by small arms fire in Paktika Province, April 22nd. Mind you, today's the 28th. This is 6 days ago. Captain Joshua M. McClymans, age 30, of Akron, Ohio, with the 848th Forward Surgical Team. He was with the Army Reserve, and judging on his rank, Captain, he may very well have been a doctor. He was killed by indirect fire at Forward Operating Base Salerno in Coast Province on April 22nd. Chief Warrant Officer Terry L. Varnadori, Varnadori II, age 29, of Hendersonville, North Carolina. He was with the 10th Mountain Division, probably a pilot, based on his rank, again, Chief Warrant Officer. He died of wounds suffered when his helicopter went down due to an undetermined cause in Capiza Province on April 23rd. I believe they were trying to rescue people when it went down. Sergeant Sean T. Callahan, age 23, of Warrenton, Virginia, with the 2nd Marine Division, one of 2 Marines killed in combat in Helmand Province on April 23rd. The other was Lance Corporal Dominic J. Charamitaro, age 19, of South Lyon, Michigan. Sergeant First Class Benjamin Franklin Bitney, age 37, of Greencastle, PA, 3rd Special Forces Group, killed by a roadside bomb while on patrol in Kandahar Province on April 23rd. Staff Sergeant James Allen Justice, age 32, of Grimes, Iowa. He was with the 34th Infantry of the Iowa Army National Guard, killed by small arms fire during rescue operations of a downed helicopter in Capiza Province. That may very well have been the same one that Chief Warrant Officer Varnadori was killed in. It was the same day in the same place. Sergeant First Class Bradley S. Hughes, age 41, of Newark, died of a non-combat incident in Kandahar on April 24th. Sergeant David P. Day, age 26, of Gaylord, Michigan, Marine Special Operations Regiment, killed in combat by a roadside bomb in Bagdis Province on April 24th. And I'd like to just cite two of our allies. Those were the Americans. Two of our allies, Captain Lisa Jade Head, age 29, of Huddersfield, West Yorkshire, England. She was with the Explosive Ordnance with a Ordnance Disposal Squadron. She died on April 19th at Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham, England, of wounds received when a roadside bomb she was attempting to defuse detonated in Helmand Province on March 27th. She held on for 23 days before succumbing to her wounds. And the other of our allies is Corporal Alexander Riviere, age 23, of Saint-Marie, France. He was with the French 2nd Marine Infantry Regiment, killed when his armored vehicle struck a roadside bomb in Capiza Province on April 20th. These 18 American servicemen, 2 American servicewomen, 1 Frenchman and 1 English woman were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Thousands of American servicemen and women and our allies are at risk of their lives at this very moment. Many will be killed. Your part is to keep them in your minds and hearts and to not take your privileged lives for granted. Their deaths and the sacrifices of their more fortunate comrades in arms protect your liberty and lifestyle. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. And I heard on the radio this morning I have not confirmed it, but I've heard that six of our people were killed in Afghanistan just yesterday. I don't have any independent confirmation of that. Okay, this will be time for the Culture Corner. My reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, whatever. Keep in mind that these are my opinions. You have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. Fortunately for you, you can't be wrong today because I have no review. I did see Kathleen Turner in High, but that play closed on Sunday, so it would be fruitless to review it. Kathleen Turner was fun to watch, but the play itself was fairly weak. Okay, my guest today is Dean and Professor of Social Work at Boston University, Dr. Gail Steckety. Dr. Steckety has written a fascinating book on hoarding, which I could hardly put down, called Stuff. Many of you have heard of the infamous Collier brothers, whose home was so filled with possessions that they could barely move around a relatively large house. The syndrome which they shared, the two brothers, eventually killed at least one of them who could not get around and most likely starved to death when the other, who was his caretaker, died. But they were not alone. As Professor Steckety relates in Stuff, there are many like them, all of whom live in such a way that without intervention or epiphany will die tragically among tons, literally tons, of what can only be called trash. Speaking to us from Boston, welcome Professor Gail Steckety.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Sorry it took us so long to get to you, but now that we have you, we're going to really use you. First of all, how is the weather in Boston? We like to keep track with weather in places.
Well, it's overcast, but not raining, and that's a good thing.
Well, since I like rain, I don't think that's such a good thing. But here is just...
Oh, we've had enough.
It's just raining lightly, and we're looking at some much heavier rain later on.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I first heard of the Collier brothers years ago, I thought they were the only ones. Come to find out, there are many extreme hoarders who live desperate lives surrounded by tons, literally tons, of possessions they can never use or let go. How widespread is this phenomenon?
Well, as far as we can tell from the data, it looks like somewhere between 3 and 5% of the adult population can have at least a moderate level of hoarding.
And by moderate, what do you mean?
I mean that the clutter interferes with their ability to use their homes in the way they would like, and most of us do. And at least somebody's distressed by it. Sometimes it's the person who's got the problem, and sometimes it's the people who are living around them.
And by distressed, you mean... real anxiety, or just, oh, I wish I could get rid of that crap?
Bothered, significantly bothered.
Significantly bothered.
Disturbed by it, and it's really the interference that drives that.
The interference, you say?
Well, the impaired, yeah, because they're impaired.
They can't walk around their houses, or they can't find things.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you live next door to someone like that, often this can impinge on your own. If you're living in a rental apartment, you might have to face the same bugs that are coming into your neighbors, and so forth.
And they tend to smell, do they?
Well, some do, not all by any stretch, but there are homes that, you know, it's pretty difficult to clean and to keep vermin out, if you will,
sure,
when you've got a pretty seriously cluttered home. If it's only moderate, not so much of a problem.
Okay, Professor Steckety, we have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes, and we're going to keep you until 11 o'clock.
Thank you.
Okay, hang on, please. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Weed, California, Frogs Suck, Wyoming, Crapstone, UK, Monkey's Eyebrow, Arizona, or Abergavenny, UK, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. I am Bob Levinsohn. My guest is Gail Steckety. Ernie Davis is in the studio, and we will be right back.
Business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, pending home sales rising 5.1% in March to its highest reading since November, and this is the second straight month of increases. Meanwhile, the U.S. economy slowing sharply during the first quarter as high gas prices cut into consumer spending. Real GDP coming in light also of estimates showing that the economy expanding at an annual rate of 1.8%. This, a day after the Federal Reserve announced that it expects the economy will grow at a 3% pace in each of the next three quarters. And more Americans joining the unemployment line in the past week as initial claims rose to 429,000. The four-week average, which smooths out volatility, is at its highest level since mid-February. The latest round of economic news taking its toll on Wall Street as stocks struggle in early morning trading. The Dow, though, still up by about 20 points. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Ashley Webster.
Micro talked to a real Ford service advisor surrounded by lots of tires.
Am I crazy, Fiona, or is this a lot of tires?
Well, Mike...
Don't answer. How many tires does Ford buy every year?
Over 3 million.
That's a lot of tires.
Well, we carry 11 major brands.
Buy four select tires, get a $100 rebate, and that's on top of the low-price tire guarantee.
So the chances are very good that if I need new tires, you have them?
Yes.
At a good price?
Absolutely.
Competitors add required for tire guarantee. See participating dealership or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 531-11.
Could be trendy and charge you to listen, but we'd rather keep things fair and simple.
Easy to work. Up antenna, switch on.
We're proud to be free radio. WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD3.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Levensold. It is Environmentally Sound. We are speaking with Professor Gail Steckety. She is a dean and professor of the Social Work School in Boston University in Boston. Welcome back.
Thank you.
A couple of people that I contrasted in reading this very fascinating book. Again, the book is called Stuff. It's written by Gail Steckety and Randy O. Frost, whoever that may be. The subtitle is Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things. It was hard to put this book down. It's not for everybody. Not everybody really wants to see how the pathological, obsessive-compulsive mind works, but it did fascinate me. Okay, now there's a couple of people, they're all pseudonyms, but you call this one Deborah. And now some of these people are very smart. This is not just fools who can't get rid of stuff. This is smart people who have rationales for keeping them. This one lady, Deborah, was the keeper of magazines, and she not only kept magazines that she found, but she would buy all of the current magazines, and if they were even touched, they were somehow tainted. So she had to make special arrangements with the newsstands that she got pristine copies. And of course, you could never be that perfect. She said, when Professor Steckety asked her about what would happen if she stopped collecting new ones and got rid of them. She said, to stop would make all those years a waste of my life. It would make my existence invalid. This has ruined me. I'm smart and creative. I could have been happy, but I'm not anything. I have done nothing. I'm collecting life without living it. That was Deborah. And then we have Pamela, who also says she was saving cats. She said, for 20 years, I was able to rescue any animal that came my way, and to think otherwise would have meant that she had wasted those 20 years. So both of these people knew that they had invested a tremendous amount of time in tremendously destructive behavior, and they couldn't stop. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think that attests to how compelling this problem can be. The fundamental challenge for people who hoard is that they can't get rid of things because they keep coming up with feelings about those things, negative feelings if they were to get rid of them, just as these two people did. And also very positive reasons for keeping them. Oh, imagine the opportunity that this presents. Or, oh, I'm saving this thing from certain death in the case of an animal. Or I'm going to use it for something, or I'll give it to someone who will really appreciate it.
But in the case of the animal, this Pamela and this crazy psychiatrist who she was working for, they were rescuing cats that were actually better off where they were.
In many cases, I think that's the case.
So logic just breaks down completely.
Well, it does, especially when you've been doing this for a while and you see the point at which there is so much stuff, or in the case of animals, way too many animals, to be able to manage it.
600 this doctor had, and Pamela herself had 200, and Pamela's whole day, starting at, I think you said, 3 o'clock in the morning, was caring for the psychiatrist. 600 cats. This woman was a doctor, a medical doctor, right?
Yep.
So it's not just yahoos in the street. This is highly educated people who go crazy.
Right. You can see just how compelling the need to keep it is.
Now, Professor, the American Psychiatric Association, I think it was, it defines hoarding as one of 8 symptoms of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and they define it as inability to discard worthless, worn-out objects even when they have no sentimental value. You disagree with that. Explain.
Well, yes, and that's the definition of obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Right, OCPD.
There are a couple of problems with it. One is that personality disorder seems to exist pretty independently of this problem of hoarding, so it probably doesn't belong there in the first place.
Okay.
And the other is that with regard to OCD itself, washing, checking, cleaning, you know, putting things right, that too looks like a very different condition than hoarding does. We've got a lot of evidence at this point that not only the just symptom patterns, the collecting of objects, the difficulty discarding, is not something that characterizes the rest of OCD symptoms. And there's plenty of evidence that the genetics and probably the brain functioning are quite different.
But they do say it's one of 8 symptoms of OCD, or
OCPD.
Right. I didn't realize there was that big a distinction between.
Yeah, there is a bit of a distinction.
Okay. But you feel that in most cases, or many cases, or lots of cases, there actually is sentimental value, and I have to agree based on my own attachment to things.
Oh, yeah. People who hoard save for exactly the same reasons that the rest of us save. We want things because they remind us of something, good memories.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We want things because we don't want to waste them. Lots of us, especially on your environmentally sound program, have that sentiment at hand, and it's a good one. It just gets carried too far.
So it is degree, because I look around, I brought in a bunch of stuff. I told you I had tons of stuff, it's as I look at it, I could not throw it away, but I could bring it here, and if you tell me to throw it away, I will. So you're going to do a little bit of therapy on me here.
Okay.
In fact, we have about 2 minutes before the break. Let's see if we can get any out of the way. I recently had a laptop, which no longer functioned, and I kept it around for a while because I wanted to take the hard drive out and destroy it. So I took the hard drive out. And in so doing, I took the computer apart. I have a keyboard, a cover, I have screws, I have parts. I'm keeping them because I'm going to make a mobile out of them someday. What do you think about that?
Well, if you are truly going to make a mobile out of it, then that's an interesting idea, and I hope you have some artistic talent to put it together well. But if you've never done such a thing, you have to think about how you value your time.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Is that actually something that you are highly likely to do?
Well, I have made mobiles, and I do find it interesting, but realistically, no, I'm not going to do that, nor am I going to do it with the broken fan that I brought down. It's in a bag somewhere here.
Okay.
Also, I have a light bulb, one of those, I don't know, it's a funny kind of light bulb. It says there's mercury in it. I was going to take it apart and take the mercury out.
Well, that doesn't sound like such a good idea to me.
Okay, so should I throw out this bulb with the mercury?
Well, in a safe way, certainly.
Oh, I'm just going to put it in the trash. Please don't make me take it home with me.
Well, all you have to do, again, for environmental reasons, is figure out what that mercury is going to do.
That's
the only question.
I threw it in the trash. It's in a plastic bag, and hopefully it won't. And so I should throw this computer out and the fan as well.
Well, I can't tell you to do that.
Oh, please, Gail. I was hoping you would.
But I can ask you how realistic your reasons for saving it are.
Well,
and then, depending on what you tell me, I'm going to ask you, well, then what do you think you should do with it?
Okay, well, you're spoken like a true therapist, and unfortunately, or fortunately for me, because I'm sweating here, we're going to have to take another break. So hang on, and we'll be back, and I'm going to push you for some more stuff that may be a little harder to address. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. My guest is Professor Dr. Gail Steckety of Boston University. She is the dean of the social work department. I am Bob Lubenthal. Ernie Davis is out the door. This is Environmentally Sound. If you're listening in Accident, Maryland, Arsenic Tubs, New Mexico, Artichoke, Minnesota, Bad Kissing in Germany, or Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, you have logged on to www.wvox.com. You are listening live, and we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Ron Flatter. The sound of a tornado hitting Mississippi yesterday, part of the deadliest storms to strike the South in 40 years. Homes and businesses leveled by direct hits from twisters.
Oh my gracious, there's no way of me ever even imagining how much of a loss. It's more of a loss than I can even comprehend right now.
She's in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. More than 200 deaths have been confirmed in six states, 131 in Alabama, where countless others are unaccounted for.
A lot of people are missing, and so people have been out here screaming for their loved ones, and occasionally they'll hear something back in the rubble. So firemen have come in, and they're trying to remove the debris. It's a very dangerous thing to remove this debris. They're in search and rescue mode, and they will be for about another 24 to 48 hours, and then they'll move to search and recovery.
Fox News meteorologist Rick Reichmuth in Tuscaloosa. Tornado watches and warnings right now all up and down the East Coast. This is a Fox News alert.
Critter Comforts, Westchester's most beloved and respected pet store, is now in Mamaroneck. You remember Critter Comforts from Weaver Street in Scarsdale, where for many years they found loving owners for lovable puppies. Thousands of beautifully bred quality puppies. Before Critter Comforts, it was risky at best to buy an animal from any pet store. But for 18 years, Paula, the Critter Comforts owner, has earned a unique and enviable rep as the source for well-bred, adorable puppies. Maltese, Yorkies, Poodles, Golden Retrievers, Retrievers, Cockapoos, Cocker Spaniels, Beagles, and more, individually selected from the finest breeders in the nation. Visit the new Critter Comforts with your family and welcome Paula and her new collection of lovable pups to 822 Mamaroneck Avenue, near I-95 in the Hutch between Calico Corners and the Car Wash, across from the A&P. Now in Mamaroneck, Critter Comforts, the home of Paula's Puppies, also pet supplies and grooming. Open 7 days a week. For directions, call the new Critter Comforts at 914-472-5407. That's 472-5407, or on the web at crittercomfort.net.
This is Phil Reisman. I want to invite you to tune in to a very special edition of High Noon this coming Thursday, April 28th, when my special guest will be Bill O'Shaughnessy, the shy, modest, retiring president of this radio station. Let me have Adam for a one-hour, no-holds-barred session, during which we'll turn the tables, or rather I should say, the microphone, on the master interviewer himself. O'Shaughnessy has promised to answer all my questions on any subject from the great issues of the day to who does his dry cleaning. I invite you, my loyal listeners, every Thursday, to have at the great O'Shaughnessy, the white-haired mogul, live on the air this coming Thursday from noon till 1. I've been waiting for a chance to grill this guy for a long time.
Did I really agree to this? Reisman is too bright, he's too tough, he's too great, he should stick to the damn newspaper. Let me do radio. Forget this program, I'm going to be out of the country. I'm not showing.
Reisman grills O'Shaughnessy this Thursday. We think, we hope. Will he pull his punches? Be sure to listen this Thursday to High Noon with Phil Reisman and his special guest Bill O'Shaughnessy from noon to 1, right here on America's greatest community radio station, 1460 WVOX and WVOX Worldwide.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity on this Thursday, 28th day of April already, with flash flood watch in effect. From noon today right through this evening, it'll be cloudy, some showers, and maybe some thunderstorms. Some of the thunderstorms will produce some strong gusty winds and heavy downpours. Our temperatures, lower 70s. Still a chance of a shower or two into the evening hours, but the trend will be towards clearing overnight, lows ranging into the mid-50s. Mostly sunny, beautiful weather on Friday, or highs in the upper 60s. Some clouds at night, nighttime lows mid-40s, so it will be cool. Saturday, mostly sunny, mid-60s. Sunday, mostly sunny, in the upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Go global on WVOX.com. Well,
doggy.
Call David O'Shaughnessy for more information. 914-636-1460.
WVOX.
We are back. This is Bob Lubenthal. This is Environmentally Sound. My guest is Professor Gail Steckety. Welcome back, Dr. Steckety.
Thank you.
While we were on our break, I got a text from someone who says, keep the keyboard. Jerry will just use it for the kids. She's talking about a school teacher, so I have to save that keyboard. See, now that's a good thing. Also, this morning I succeeded in giving away a brand new wireless router to our station manager and an old brand new but very old necktie that is impossible to wear to somebody else. So I've actually given a couple of things away, which makes me feel good.
That's good for you. I hope it's okay for them.
Well, the router has to find a home. It's just that so many people already have
yes,
them.
Yes, that I understand.
Okay, now I've just disassembled the rest of that computer, and it's really such interesting stuff, fans and motherboards and all that. But okay, we won't get right into that right now. I have a friend who is an interesting person. She's a widow of a fairly well-known painter named Herman Cherry, and she is an art widow. She has lots and lots of his paintings, and they are worth a lot of money if, in fact, they are marketed. And she does have gallery shows occasionally, but she has to store them properly. And so she's locked into an apartment, and she also has a house out in the Hamptons. And she also has clutter all over her floors and all of that. So I don't know what to say about her. In a sense, she is she must keep stuff because it's got potentially great value. But in other cases, she never lets a fax machine go. If she sees one and they're pretty obsolete, she doesn't. Printers, monitors, her house is full of computers, telephones, all that stuff. She actively seeks new ones, never lets any of it go. She had a bag of bows, stringed instrument bows, and I have a friend who plays the violin who did not have one. I had to cajole her to get a violin bow out of this bag she had collected. I'm sure they're still in the same place on her floor, even though I haven't been there for years. So what do you say about a person like that?
Well, it certainly sounds like she has a hoarding problem because she's got the classic symptom of can't let anything go,
right?
Can't part with it. And that means there's some pretty strong emotional attachment to this stuff, but it sounds like it's a mix of things.
Yes.
And the art, we certainly would understand,
of course,
that you know they're clearly valuable things in this apartment, but it also sounds like there are a number of things that are perhaps not so valuable and or don't make much sense for her to own because she can't use them. A bag of bows is
the bows.
Terrific for other people, but only
right.
if she can part. So
and she's
she
not,
needs some help practicing a lot of that.
And she's not looking for a way to get rid of them, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I had to use for a bow, and I had to actually persuade her. You know, she did not want to let it go, even though she couldn't use it. Now, in my case, when somebody comes to my house, if they see something they can use, I say, oh, please take it. I'm happy to get rid of it. I just can't throw something that might have some utility left out.
Okay. But you also, as I hear it, don't have a lot of clutter either.
Well, everything's relative, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so I don't know what you'd call a lot. Probably not. I mean, I can walk in my apartment without any difficulty. What does one do when moving to a smaller space? Now, I have a friend who moved from a fairly large house to an apartment, and she got rid of all her old records. She'd been keeping playbills and ticket stubs since, I think, 1955. So these had some true sentimental value, mm-hmm. and she had to get rid of them, and she did. So, you know, I admire that. And it's another fellow who ran a resort that I frequented back in the 70s and 80s. He had 300 guests a weekend, and the cellar was spotless. I mean, if there was a chair that could be fixed in a very short time, he'd fix it. Otherwise, it went right on the dump truck. He had no sentiment about anything. Mm-hmm. So is that pathology in reverse, or that's healthy?
Well, it's all, again, relative, because if that works for him, and he has all the things he needs in his home, and he can entertain people and be enjoy the experience and enjoy the friends' visits, then I don't see the problem there. It really all comes down to whether or not a person can do what they want to do in their lives in a comfortable way.
I get that. I think it was Eric Fromm, or I think you said Eric Fromm in the book. I lost the exact reference. Said that hoarding leads to social withdrawal. I wonder if it could be the other way, that maybe a chicken and egg scenario. Maybe hoarding is a means to justifying withdrawing as the end, do you think?
Well, possibly. There are a lot of people who hoard who are pretty isolated, and the isolation is a big part of the problem and perhaps enables them to continue the hoarding behavior,
like,
because they don't have the same comfort level and strong wish to have people visit them in their home.
Like perhaps that Ralph guy who couldn't speak very well anyway, he had speech impediment. Maybe this is a way of justifying why people wouldn't hang with him by pushing them away, do you think?
Very possibly. On the other hand, we have known a lot of people with pretty serious hoarding problems who are quite social, and they do their socializing outside the home.
Like Irene, for
instance. All they can. Yeah, Irene is a good example.
Yeah. There's something called magical contagion, where everything has is imbued with something special. Now, we understand if we have an autograph from a celebrity, or when the president signs a special bill, he'll sign one letter with a pen, and he'll come up with a dozen or 20 pens for signing one bill, and those become prized keepsakes. I understand that, and even the playbills, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this magical contagion. If you have a glove that Michael Jackson wore, sure, but pathological people, according to your book, attach that sort of magical connection to everything. Is that?
That's true, because the ones that you're talking about are from celebrities, and actually on the open market, they would garner a nice price. If we have Jerry Seinfeld's shirt, it actually is probably somebody will buy that.
You mean the puffy shirt?
Pay a pretty penny for it.
You mean?
But if you attach that kind of sort of connectivity, if you will, to something like just a receipt that you have from 20 years ago,
right,
because it represents a day in your life, it's not worth anything to anybody, probably even you, except this magical, it's a day in my life, is what it seems to mean to a person.
Okay.
But the truth is that piece of paper is not the day in their life. That day was an experience that they had, not an object.
Well, I hold in my hand a beautifully bound leather desk calendar from 2009, the American Express appointment book. It has everything I did, all the appointments, and it is a piece of my life. I have these from various years. Why am I keeping these?
Well, that's a good question, because I actually have a few of those myself. I have a little drawer full of things, but that little drawer is full of things that had meaning to me at that time, and it's pretty small. And so the real question is, I have a powerful intention of going back to that drawer, and I'm quite confident I will do it. At the moment I retire, in the year after I retire, I will pore over that and see what it is of that I want to keep and why. So I will spend my time and enjoy the experience of reliving those memories. Will you? That's the question.
No.
Okay, then maybe you don't want to hang on to that.
I don't know. And it's just one. I have another one here, another calendar from, I don't even know what year it is, maybe 2010. It's just a wall calendar. That I'm going to throw on my own. And in fact, that's the one I wrote your telephone number on.
Aha. Okay. Well, that you can get rid of.
Okay. I'll keep your phone number someplace else. We're going to have to take another break. We're speaking with Professor Gail Steckety, Dean and Professor of Social Work at Boston University. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 coming out of New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening outside of a listening area, you are at www.wvox.com listening live, and we will be right back.
world and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Lillian Wu.
We have some major damage.
Governor Robert Bentley of Alabama, just one of the six southern states suffering after severe storms ripped through. More than 200 people have been killed, 131 of them in Alabama alone.
Tuscaloosa is probably the hardest hit city in the state, but as many as a million people are without power. They've even started shutting down a nuclear power plant in northern Alabama for safety reasons. Governor says everybody's doing their best.
It's just that you cannot prepare against an F5 tornado.
President Obama also sending federal aid through FEMA.
Fox Radio's Evan Brown. Thousands are descending on Florida Space Coast hotels for tomorrow's launch of Space Shuttle Endeavor. It's the next to last for the program, and the president and his family are expected to be there for it. And pending home sales for March up 5.1%, though sales were uneven across the country and not strong enough to signal a rebound. Fox News, we report, you decide.
A special message from Whitney Radio. The Broadcasters Foundation of America and Fordham University Press are making available a limited quantity of signed first edition copies of William O'Shaughnessy's brand new book, Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Only just now arriving in bookstores coast to coast for $35. Copies of the new Bill O'Shaughnessy book have arrived at WVOX and WVIP in Westchester. For every $35 donation to the Broadcasters Foundation of America, you'll receive a signed, personally inscribed first edition copy of Vox Populi, The O'Shaughnessy Files. Character profiles and heartwarming vignettes of legendary Westchester and New York figures. Jack Newfield, Bob Grant, Ossie Davis, Wellington Mara, Robert Merrill, John Spicer, Larry King, Ned Garrity, Dr. Rich Pisano, Mario Cuomo, Harry Belafonte, and beloved townies like Bill Scolin and John Branca. A dazzling and entertaining tour of Westchester and New York, past and present. You can now pick up signed copies of the brand new Bill O'Shaughnessy Westchester History Book here at our studios in New Rochelle. It makes a great gift for anyone who loves colorful characters and enjoys politics in New York and Westchester. A limited time offer for just $35 to the Broadcasters Foundation of America. Signed copies are available now at WVOX and WVIP. One Broadcast Forum, New Rochelle. Call 914-636-1460 for directions. 636-1460. 636-1460.
Today's public service programs are brought to you by the Burnback Law Firm of White Plains. This famous Manhattan law firm, now in Westchester, is a national leader in workplace job discrimination issues. Headed by attorney Jeffrey M. Burnback, the author of the well-known book, Job Discrimination, How to Fight, How to Win, the classic text informing employees of legal options available in cases of job discrimination, the Burnback Law Firm is located in downtown White Plains at 245 Main Street across from City Center. Airline founder Don Burr says Jeff Burnback's overview and knowledge of job discrimination ranks with other sweeping visions of employee empowerment. Another reviewer said, as a lawyer and public servant, Jeff Burnback has been drawn relentlessly, almost irresistibly, to the side of those who faced discrimination in all its forms. His entire life and law practice are dedicated to those who find themselves without an advocate when the roof caves in at work. Now, all this great knowledge, dedication, and expertise is available in our area at the Burnback Law Firm in White Plains, 914-428-9100. Area code 914-428-9100.
You've been cooped up all winter.
Go to the window, open it.
Smell that fresh air.
Experience the excitement of spring with WVOX Worldwide.
The voice of Westchester, WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Dr. Gail Steckety, professor of social work and dean of that department at Boston University. Welcome back.
Thank you.
A couple of questions. In 2007, the island of Nantucket, off your fair state of Massachusetts, the health department was forcing cleanouts of hoarders, and they abandoned those forced cleanouts when three consecutive hoarders died shortly after being returned to their cleaned out homes. What killed those guys?
Well, I think it probably varies from person to person, but what they certainly learned, and we have been advising all along, is that people suffer tremendous distress when someone else comes in and throws out their stuff. And if you imagined it, you know, if we, those of us who don't have a hoarding problem, if anyone came into our house and just threw our things out, my golly, we would be horrified.
Yes.
And incredibly upset. And so even though they have too much stuff and they know that, still somebody else can't undertake to do that unless you give them permission to do it without causing an awful lot of stress.
And by stress, you mean they actually died from this?
Well, possibly.
Well,
these are older people, and there's only so much a person can tolerate when they also have concurrent other problems like health problems and mental health problems, which is true for most people.
Okay, you're being very understanding and generous to these people, but they were all hoarders and they all died shortly after being released. So that extra anxiety of coming back to an empty house must have just given their heart that final blow.
It has to be horrifying, exactly.
Oh, so that can actually kill. Tell me, you went into the home of a senior citizen, I think she was 70, 71, named Nell. Do you remember these people from their pseudonyms?
I remember some of them and remember that Dr. Frost is also the person who was in the home for some of these cases.
But you went into Nell's house, and it was, as I recall, it was January. It was about 0 degrees Fahrenheit, and it took her 10 minutes to move stuff to let you in.
Yeah.
Even though she was expecting you. As soon as you got in the door, she closed the door, and she put the piles back just to make a path. Did you feel claustrophobic at that point, knowing that you were in a very tight space and could not readily get out?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. There's no question about that. Yeah, well, as you can see, one of the problems that people face is that if there were an emergency in this home, how could people get in? The fire department can't get in. The EMTs can't get in. So pretty serious problems.
Well, isn't that what happened to the Collier brothers? Well, actually, nobody knew to get in, but
the one
brother died because the other brother was dead and couldn't bring him food, right?
That's right. And in my own hometown area, the next town over, I remember passing the fire trucks out front of one home and come to find out it was indeed a hoarded home, and I had known that just to look at it by passing by every day. Mm-hmm. But the man died in that fire in the second floor rear bedroom because the firefighters simply could not get to him.
Couldn't get him out. Now, are hoarding and organizing separate problems, or is that part of the same thing?
Part of the same problem. If you can't make decisions about getting rid of things, you also have an awful lot of trouble organizing things. You don't know what to put with what. You don't know where to put it.
All right. I got a couple of more items here I'm going to talk to you about. I have a box of floppy disks. You know what a floppy disk is?
Oh, I do.
I have a brand new box. They've never been used. The labels are intact, and there's about at least a dozen, three, six, just over 50.
I hate to tell you, you're a little behind the time.
I have the modern stuff, too, but what do I do with these?
Well, what do you think you should do with
those? Oh, please, Gail, I want you to tell me.
Are they useful is the question answer, and the truth is no. Right?
No, and I asked my computer guy, and he says he can't use them, and he shrugged his shoulders like, I don't know what you're going to do with them. They're your problem.
So that's a bite the bullet.
So I have to throw these in the trash?
I'm afraid so. You made your own case for that one.
Done. I did it.
Good.
I have foot warmers here. They're useful. They're in a closed container, but I never use them. You put them in your sock, you know, in the winter. And
what are they?
Foot warmers.
Oh, I know what those are.
Yeah. I never use them. They clutter up my house. What should I do with them?
Well, I think you also answered that question, didn't you?
Did I answer that they go in the garbage?
They go in the garbage unless you've got someone you can hand them off to, just like you did earlier in the day in your office.
Done.
Somebody can use them.
They're done. Now, I get a monthly prescription, and I save all the bottles.
Why do you do that?
I don't know. They're even marked 5, so they're not readily recyclable. Because they're such nice little things, it would be a waste to throw them out, and I keep them.
Right. And perhaps we should all decide that we want to work on behalf of getting rid of packaging that we need to have less of in our society. But for the moment, on a personal level, it doesn't sound like they're going to be of much use to you.
Okay, well, I brought one in just as a sample. I've got a drawer full of them at home. I'm going to throw this one out.
Good job.
Thank you. Oh, I really needed to hear that. That's the M&M I was waiting for. What about underwear where the elastic is gone? I've got several pairs of those. I can afford good stuff, and I have good stuff, but I keep these because on some level they're wearable, even though they slip all over the place. What do I do with them?
Well, it also sounds to me like you've made a good case for why they're not particularly useful and why you can afford to get rid of them.
What about T-shirts that I wore in very special, they bring back special memories, but they're frayed and hardly wearable except around the house. What do you do with them?
Well, unless you plan to frame it and hang it on your wall because it's a special memento,
out.
It seems to me that it might not do a lot of good in a box.
It's out. It's out.
Okay.
All you had to do was just give me a little bit of encouragement.
Yeah, I can hear that. You're pretty good at this, actually.
Who's good at me or you?
No, you. Well, you are. You're okay. Making decisions to get rid of things.
All right. Here is a pair of denim shorts, which I've had for years. They're too torn in the rear to wear any place because I'm hanging out. But I've worn them through thick and thin, and they're I love them.
Sounds just like that T-shirt. If you want to frame it.
Gone.
Okay.
Okay. I won't trouble you with any more stuff. What about syndromes like people who keep spoiled leftover food in the refrigerator and emails and inboxes which get so cluttered with obsolete items that it's hard to find those that are current, and clothing that is no longer useful even to the Salvation Army and you have enough rags?
Yeah, and for people like that, again, if it's so hard to make the decision, then they need a coach with them to help them through this initial phase. You're such a quick learner. Most people who have a serious problem aren't quick learners. And it does take a lot of repetition and a lot of going over the decision-making process to get them good at it.
Well, thank you for that. Now, I have a friend. He has OCD. He's always been like this. He's getting cluttered now, but it's not with piles of newspapers and things. He buys bric-a-brac and things that he really likes. He's very generous. When he changed, his body changed, he gave away much Brooks Brothers clothing, and when CDs came out, he gave away all his records. He's very quick to get rid of stuff, and yet his house is so cluttered, he no longer has a bed. He sleeps on a settee, which is way too small. He says beds are the most useless piece of furniture, and he's always been so careful, and you describe somebody like this in the book, someone where if you change the angle of one of his little pieces of things on a table, he goes, oh no, and you have to set it straight. What about this kind of guy?
So he's got some OCD symptoms that are about not just right experiences, trying to put things just so because people feel better when they're just so. And my guess is that the bric-a-brac he's collecting is also about how he feels. There's something about these things that somehow makes him feel more comfortable. So we need to understand a little bit more about what that's all about.
So we're not going to
why that happens.
We're not going to actually solve Thomas Birmingham's problems today.
I'm afraid not. No, that needs more thought and more attention.
Well, Gail, it's been a great pleasure. We're about out of time. You've done me some good for sure, and you've made me feel good about going home and using that principle to eliminate some of my other stuff. And as soon as I start getting piled high, I'm going to call you back and have you back on the show. And
well, I wish you the very best with all that. I'm sure you'll do great.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
I'd like to thank Professor Gail Stickety for joining us on Environmentally Sound today. Do you have a clutter problem? Seriously, do you? If you read Gail's book, Stuff, you will either breathe a sigh of relief that you are not as bad as the people she portrays, or you may recognize yourself as a hoarder somewhere along the spectrum with useless junk that you just can't toss out. I recognize myself in this group, and it does impact a free living lifestyle. It does not have to be that way. It is very liberating to throw things out, as I just found out. Let us try it together. Our thought for the week, renunciation is not getting rid of the things of this world, but accepting that they pass away. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the USA. I am Bob Leventhal, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Ron.